Welcome to the Sunshine Economy on WLRN. Thanks for listening and supporting public radio. I'm Tom Hudson.
And I'm Sammy Mack. Florida Blue is the state's biggest private health insurer. In January, it stopped paying for prescriptions of OxyContin, a popular opioid painkiller. It also required doctors to get the okay before prescribing any opioid to a patient for more than a week.
Opioid prescriptions, just one of the topics that we talked about recently with Patrick Garrity, the CEO of Florida Blue. The health insurance company collected over $9 billion in health insurance premiums last year. It covers over 5 million Floridians. It's about twice as big as its nearest competitor, and it's the only health insurer to sell Obamacare health insurance plans in all 67 counties. Now, on Friday, a federal judge in Texas declared the Affordable Care Act unconstitutional, but the government said there would be no impact on current health care coverage or coverage in 2019 as the case moves through the court system.
Enrollment for Obamacare ended Saturday. Florida has been the top state for the program since it began in 2014. 1.7 million people get their health insurance in Florida this year through the Affordable Care Act, the official name of Obamacare. And Florida Blue's CEO said signups for next year were not far off from what they've expected in the past, despite the elimination of the individual mandate, meaning people are no longer required to buy health insurance. We'll hear more about the health insurance market and costs coming up.
But first, this big drop in prescriptions for the most popular opioid painkiller, OxyContin. Since 2010, legal sales of opioids in Florida have dropped dramatically. Last year, sales were a third of what they were at the beginning of the decade, according to a health policy research center affiliated with the University of Minnesota. It used opioid sales data from the Centers of Disease Control, and the drop-off in Florida was the biggest among all the United States. Now, this data does not include this year, the first year that Florida Blue stopped paying for OxyContin, a move that Florida Blue CEO Pat Garrity is proud of.
That was absolutely the right decision, and we were a leader in making that decision. So we're very happy about that decision. As you know, OxyContin is the most addictive of the opioids, and therefore it was something that needed to be addressed and addressed quickly. One of the next things we went after was the length of the prescription. And I can just tell you my own personal story. I had a knee surgery last September, and I immediately got a 30-day supply of opioids, to which I started asking some questions because I used them for one day. And now you got 29 days sitting in your home. Yeah. That story gets repeated over and over again, and it creates a supply in the home that shouldn't be there in the first place.
You would have had to have gotten prior authorization for that 30-day prescription. Presumably, you're insured by Florida Blue, Pat.
I'm covered by Florida Blue, and that was something that was part of the procedure given the knee surgery that I was having, and not something that was appropriate at that juncture. And so we have been the loudest voice in Tallahassee about the length of the prescription, and we were very happy that we got some movement on that part of the equation. You know, one of the big issues here is Medicaid-assisted therapy. It gets a bad name because it's one drug replacing another, but when you're taking someone off a very addictive drug, you often have to move them down the continuum. And so taking some of the stigma off of someone who's addicted is absolutely critical to this equation, and it's part of what will make the change in the environment. So we've played a very active role. I personally have been involved in this, and you know, we've had really positive results that we're seeing inside of our organization, but we're all a long way from being able to declare any victories here. But we're putting a lot of attention on it.
And at the same time, we saw an editorial from Dr. Amit Vijayapura that described the trouble he has treating patients because apparently Florida Blue's formulary only covers one of the classes of drugs in the I think it's the naloxone class, so that's the one that stops the opioid from working, and that there are other drugs within that class. So how do you square that the choice within what will be covered as a prescription with this emerging understanding that medically assisted therapy can be extremely helpful for someone who's been addicted to opioids?
Yes. So our medical team, working with the State Department of Health and working with providers as issues come up, are going to make the clinical decisions. I'm not going to be part of making the clinical decisions, but the right clinical minds are looking at these issues. And there are always places where you're going to need to make exceptions. But what we're trying to do is make sure we've got a policy infrastructure that supports moving people off of opioid addiction. And where we have exceptions that need to be made to help people in particular circumstances, we're having those dialogues with clinicians talking to clinicians.
In addition to stopping the insurance coverage of OxyContin in January of 2018, you started covering an alternative form of pain relief that can't be crushed, preventing it from being injected or snorted. Have you seen and compared OxyContin prescriptions in 2017 with the prescriptions for this alternative in 2018? And is it just a shift of patients from one form to another form of medical pain treatment?
After dropping OxyContin, we've seen a 45% decrease in opioid prescriptions inside of our plans. So we know that we're not having it just be a trade out within our experience levels. And we also know that the education we've been doing with folks have provided lots of alternatives that are over-the-counter pain relief, which the clinicians I've talked to have told me that in many, many cases, if not most cases, over-the-counter pain relief does a very good job and as good a job as an opioid would do for most patients.
And with that 45% drop in opioid prescriptions, have you seen any correlated drops in people who are coming to you with diagnoses of abusing opioids, of having opioid use disorder?
Yeah, I think we have seen that. It's real early to get the full trend, but anecdotally, yes, we're seeing the positive trend there.
Pat, just to clarify a couple of things here, a 45% drop in opioid prescriptions in 2018 across the class that OxyContin belonged to?
Yes.
Yes. So any future plans to continue to extend Florida Blue's efforts within the insurability of pain medicine in 2019, Pat?
You know, we're trying to do a lot in the area of education, and we're trying to do a lot in working with the Department of Health and making sure that we're educating at the grassroots level. One of the other places that we've done outreach is to dentists. One of the places we found an awful lot of opioid prescriptions being given out was in dental offices. And so I think when the awareness of the impact of this, you know, scourge on the community from opioids has been out there and the education has taken place, we're seeing a lot of people pulling together. This is not a Florida Blue only. This is us working with lots of stakeholders to make sure the education is there, people understand the options and choices, and that we're doing the best job we can to help our members navigate through this problem.
And this is a problem that goes back almost a decade to the pill mills that Florida, I don't know that we can say we invented them, but we sure made them work. And once they were closed down, people started turning more towards heroin. And so we have an environment where opioid use and opioid abuse has been growing to a crisis point for a while. So at what point did Florida Blue realize that this was your problem that you could intervene on based on how you pay for opioids? Like, what did it take for you to see that?
Well, I think in terms of the payment policies, really over the last couple of years. But I should step back and say that when you were talking about pill mills, we had our special investigations unit working partnered with the state and the Attorney General's office to be very much a part of helping identify and close down many of those shops. So we were actively involved in this process throughout that.
Did you go to them or did they come to you for that help?
When we saw different patterns emerging, we were part of identifying what we were seeing. But I think it was a two-way street. the Attorney General's office asking for help on certain things, and us pointing out things that we were noticing emerging.
There are a lot of players in the legal distribution of opioid pain medication. The Attorney General of Florida, Pam Bondi, has recently added Walgreens and CVS to a lawsuit against opioid makers, saying that the pharmacies, quote, played a role in creating the opioid crisis. Has Florida Blue had any discussion with the Attorney General or anyone within the Attorney General's office regarding facing possible legal action in the opioid situation in Florida?
No, not at all.
And as the CEO of Florida Blue, as the single largest insurer of the health of Floridians, does Florida Blue play a role in the opioid crisis?
Florida Blue is playing a role in solving the opioid crisis, but the delivery of care and the point of attack where opioids were being driven really falls in the lap of pharma. This is one where pharma was certainly had an advantage in distributing a lot of opioids, and not necessarily in just the places where it was most suitable.
What's unsuitable? What should have been a red flag?
I think, you know, there's a variety of things that happened here, some of it in the policy arena. This is pain management became sort of the next tier of how the federal government was actually assessing providers. And so that pain management plaque, which was driven by pharma, really became a place where if you're a provider of care, you were paying attention to how you were being evaluated by the federal government for pain management. And I think that created an environment where it made this possible.
That was Florida Blue CEO Patrick Garrity. Pain was recognized as a vital sign in the 1990s, putting it on par with a patient's heart rate, blood pressure, breathing rate, and temperature. The drop-off in legal opioid sales in Florida doesn't mean the opioid crisis has ended. Nationally, life expectancy has been falling, partly due to drug overdose deaths. And Florida's death rate because of drug overdoses has been higher than the national figure.
And remember Garrity's personal experience with an opioid prescription? He got it because of a knee surgery? Well, he did say that his knee is much better now. Still to come, our conversation continues. Obamacare without the individual mandate.
We know how to price the various levels of benefit because we've been there every single year, and we've operated in the black each and every year.
Welcome back to the Sunshine Economy. Thanks for listening. I'm Tom Hudson.
And I'm Sammy Mack.
On Friday in Texas, a federal judge ruled Obamacare unconstitutional because the individual mandate is no more. The ruling is expected to be appealed, and the Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Services says it has no impact on current Obamacare plans or plans in 2019.
For the first time in 5 years, you do not face a fine if you don't have health insurance in the new year. A cornerstone of the Affordable Care Act was the individual mandate. It required almost everyone to have health insurance. If you didn't get coverage, you faced a fine of at least $695 or 2.5% of your income. For someone making $50,000 a year, that fine could be over $1,200. But not in 2019.
Nope. In the tax bill that was approved in 2017, the individual mandate was repealed. Now, technically, the law just reduces the fine for not getting health insurance to zero, effectively, than getting rid of the requirement altogether.
So far, we are seeing great enthusiasm in our enrollments.
That's Pat Garrity. He's CEO of Florida Blue, speaking with us 2 weeks before the deadline to sign up for Obamacare. That deadline was this past Saturday.
We were wondering how that would play out, but to this point in the enrollment process, we're ahead of pace.
The final numbers aren't in yet, but Florida Blue covers more than 300,000 through its Obamacare insurance. Even though the company didn't experience much of a change in people signing up for coverage, even though they don't have to have it any longer, Garrity said patients who have to pay something for coverage have changed the type of coverage they're buying.
A subsidy or close to full subsidy from the government, a lot of them have stayed in the plans they've been in previously.
By financial commitment, you mean that the patient has to pay something per month?
Yes. If they have a piece of the premium that they're paying, They've been looking at all of the different options, and many of those folks have moved to bronze plans. Not all of them. Some of them have maintained higher level plans as well.
And the bronze plans are the plans where you pay a lower monthly payment or premium, but you'd have a higher deductible, right?
Yes.
How does that compare to the other metal level plans? Like, what are we talking about when we talk about bronze, silver, platinum?
Yeah, for each of these plans, for the most part, you're looking at what level of deductible and coinsurance the individual is responsible for. And so what people do is they look at what is the premium for them and what are the coinsurance and deductible levels that they're selecting from. And so there's a range of deductibles depending upon which plan you're in. And individuals are making that sort of value-based trade-off as they go through the purchase cycle.
And so if coinsurance is somebody paying a percentage of whatever the bill is going to be, 20% or so, are you seeing, do you have people signing up more for plans that have coinsurance as opposed to fixed co-payments for things? Or what's kind of the breakdown about on the kinds of products people are buying in health insurance?
You know, I think the decision process has been driven more by people making a decision about what premium they can afford, how does it fit into their monthly budget, and when they get to what level of premium they can afford, then they're looking at what does that translate to in terms of the coverage packages. So I think the decision's actually being made in the other direction.
When talking about averages and money, it's always difficult, but I do want to talk about averages and monthly premiums, since your estimation is, and I think probably accurately so, that that's where folks kind of begin the consideration about their healthcare coverage is what is it going to cost every month. According to the Florida Office of Insurance Regulation, the average Affordable Care Act Marketplace Florida Blue monthly premium for 2019, $685. That's the highest in the state of all plans offered on the ACA marketplace. Why is that, Pat?
Well, you know, when you set premiums, they're driven by the enrollment that you have. They're driven by the experience that you have, meaning when people go and use physicians and hospitals, that expense goes directly into the establishment of the premium. And so we offer plans in every different tier. And so some of our competition don't offer the range of coverage that we do. We've got long experience in this market, so we know how to price the various levels of benefit because we've been there every single year. And we've operated in the black each and every year.
So do you think that premium is more reflective of the actual financial risk in Florida for the Affordable Care Act?
Absolutely.
And when you talk about that being driven by multiple parts, including usage, Florida Blue is the largest insurer in Florida. It's the only insurer that offers Affordable Care Act plans in all 67 counties. So by extension, I imagine you probably have the largest market share of Affordable Care Act insurees, enrollees in Florida, but yet still the highest premium. So doesn't that scale give Florida Blue more, negotiating leverage for the service side of healthcare for the operators to get better pricing?
So it isn't just about unit pricing. So yes, we have big scale and we're able to get good prices as a result of having scale. But what you have to be clear on is when you bring on higher risk, and we have taken on higher risk each and every year. So we are the player who's been here from the beginning. Many other players, national players, decided to exit the market rather than take on high risk. We've been here for all risks that are in the market. And because we offer a range of products, the average premium is misleading. You can find your way to very affordable products in our range of products. And so we're very comfortable that we've priced it accurately. We give people choice and a range of options, and that people will find the right products with us in every marketplace in the state.
I just wanted to clarify, when you're talking about taking on more risk, What are you talking about? For somebody who doesn't work insurance, are you talking about people? Are you talking about finances? Are you talking about working with different kinds of provider networks? Like, what is the risk to you that other insurance companies don't have?
Yes, let me be clear. Patients who come to the marketplace, particularly those who haven't been covered before, come to the marketplace with whatever their current conditions are. There may be people who are following a track of oncology because they are a cancer patient. That risk comes into our plan, no pre-existing condition exclusion. We take on that risk. And so I think when you look across the continuum, the risk profile, if you will, the number of people who have very complex risks have come to our plan in greater numbers.
And when you're talking about that risk and pricing that risk, again, according to state data, Florida Blue had requested an average premium increase for the Affordable Care Act plans of just over 10%. The state approved an increase of 2.5% for Florida Blue, which is below actually the average premium increase, which was 5%. But at that premium increase, you're still confident that 2019 will be a profitable year for Florida Blue's Affordable Care Act plans?
Yes, we think we have priced it accurately.
Pat, let me ask you about the market where most Floridians get their health care coverage, which is in the small and large group market, the employer-based market. Have you noticed, is Florida Blue experiencing any changes in that market that you can attribute to the doing away with the individual mandate in the Affordable Care Act market?
You know, it's early to make that judgment, and we'll keep an eye on exactly what comes out of the enrollment process. But I can tell you that we went into the enrollment process with really less than a 1% increase in the small group market that's part of the marketplace.
It was 0.4% was the average premium increase in the small group market for Florida Blue that was approved by the state this year.
Tom, you've done your research.
As a matter of fact, I have, Pat.
That you are all over it. Yes, that's a very accurate quote. And so, you know, I think that is an indication that that marketplace will be healthy as a result of that. And so we feel comfortable about our continued involvement there and the relationship we have with the small group employers.
So if that market is increasing by 0.4%, but the Affordable Care Act marketplace, that those increases are going up by 2.5%. Why is that so different? What is different about those two groups of consumers?
Well, statistically, that's not dramatically different price increase, but I will tell you that the basic issue is that you have a selection bias, if you will, that can happen in the individual marketplace, meaning some people are opting to stay out of that marketplace. Other people are opting to enter that marketplace. And there's a certain amount of, if you've got a particular need, you end up in the marketplace as an individual, whereas if you feel like you don't have a need, you may stay out of that marketplace. That happens at a greater frequency in that market than in any of the group markets.
In the small group business, the employer provided a market for Florida Blue. What are the price trends, and are there new contributors to the price trends that Florida Blue is experiencing?
Well, one of the things, a couple of things that we're keeping our eye on. One will be what happens with short-term duration plans in the marketplace.
What's a short-term? Is that 90 days or is that 1 year?
It used to be 90 days, and now under the current guidelines, short-term duration plans have been extended to be a full year.
And you can sign up for it 3 years in a row, right?
Yeah, and in essence, that's a plan that can compete with a marketplace plan, even though it doesn't have the same requirements of the marketplace in terms of level of benefits. So that's one element that we'll keep an eye on. And another is association health plans, where a group of employers can actually come together and go for insurance coverage as a collective. And that's a new dynamic for the market if it takes off in any significant way. And so that's something we'll keep our eye on as well in terms of how it impacts the rest of the market.
What about the usage side of it? Because we're in a workplace environment in Florida that has record low unemployment. So presumably lots of demand on the side of employers to provide medical insurance. So are you seeing headcounts increase and demand increase and usage increase? And is that driving cost?
We have not seen that driving a higher medical expense at this point. But we are certainly well aware of that particular dynamic, and we'll be watching it.
That's Florida Blue CEO Patrick Garrity. We spoke with him before the deadline to sign up for Obamacare. That deadline was Saturday. In years past, more people in Florida signed up for the marketplace insurance than in any other state, 1.7 million people this year. And almost half of those folks live in South Florida.
Still to come in our program, the healthcare debate that has dominated Florida and Florida lawmakers for several years now, Medicaid expansion.
This is not a red and blue issue. This is really an economic issue, and it's also about the well-being of the people of the state.
Welcome back to the Sunshine Economy on WLRN. Thanks again for listening this week. I'm Tom Hudson.
And I'm Sammy Mack. Today, we're featuring an interview with the boss of the largest health insurance company in Florida, Florida Blue. It insures the health of about 5 million Floridians.
About 3 weeks before Ron DeSantis will be sworn in as the new governor, part of his transition team met to talk about health care. It's a large piece of the state budget and an increasing part of the state's economy. The governor-elect's group wants to keep the cost of health care down. During the campaign, DeSantis's health plan promised non-traditional health insurance plans like short-term coverage, plans that limit benefits and direct deals between patients and doctors, but not to expand Medicaid. Florida is one of 14 states that has not expanded the program.
Healthcare spending by the state has led to two overtime legislative sessions in the past 4 years, including money sent to public hospitals like Jackson Memorial Hospital in Miami and Memorial Healthcare and Broward Health in Broward County to provide safety net healthcare. Back to our conversation with Florida Blue CEO Patrick Garrity.
Well, there's a lot on his plate for sure. Listen, I would say that a couple of things that are on the table for discussion, whether or not they move anywhere. Some of the things that we talk about, some of the things I personally talk about, are things like a high-risk pool for the state so that we can stabilize markets in Florida. The goal should be for everyone is how do we cover as many of our citizens as possible? And that's been part of the Florida Blue mission, is how do we get as many people as possible covered in our state? Because when people arrive at emergency rooms without coverage, that's a problem. It's a problem for everybody in the whole marketplace. And what we know is the hospitals who have to cover or have to treat that patient are going to shift those expenses to the rest of the market. So we're taking care of people, but we're not doing it in the most efficient way. So covering people in the first place is very, very important. And I've talked about expansion of Medicaid numerous times. Yeah. I think there are the language of Medicaid expansion for some people bothers them to have that term in place. But I certainly think we can talk about how do we overhaul our health care marketplace? How do we look at the market and change it by having the funds come back to Florida that are Florida taxpayer dollars that we're not taking back right now to transform the market? So I do think there's a dialogue about Medicaid expansion that should be had.
Pat, do you think that the previous administration and its behavior and actions toward healthcare generally, specifically toward Medicaid expansion and the lack thereof, worked against Florida Blue's mission of providing health coverage for as many Floridians as possible?
Well, I can tell you this. We didn't get Medicaid expansion, so I deal with outcomes. And with not getting Medicaid expansion, I think that is detrimental to the state of Florida. I think more people can be covered. The expansion we know would cover almost a million people that we would bring into the marketplace, and I think that would be a good thing economically for the state, but starting with it's the right thing to do. Secondarily, it economically would help us change the marketplace that we have. We have to take healthcare out of being fee-for-service and move it to paying for value. And using the dollars that would come from Medicaid expansion could help transform the whole marketplace. I know that at a state level, flexibility is something that Florida wants, Florida legislature wants, and I think there's an opportunity to have that dialogue with the federal government so that we get to expanding the number of people covered. We didn't do that over the last number of years since the Affordable Care Act's been in place. I think it's an opportunity that's still out there.
One of the concerns about expanding Medicaid, as articulated here in Florida over the last several years, has been not the first year costs to the state, but the cost to the state in future years. So we know that the federal government, the initial offer was that it would pick up a considerable amount of the cost of expanding Medicaid in the first few years of the program, but then in future years, the state would be on the hook for more and more of those costs. And legislators in Florida balked at that. They did not want to, they said, get involved in expanding Medicaid that would have the state on the hook for greater and greater amounts of money in future years. How do you address that criticism of the expansion of Medicaid strategy?
Here's how I made this argument in the first place. The first 3 years would be funded at 100%. Then the federal government would fund at 90%. And my recommendation was, instead of talking about this as a subsidy to anybody, let's talk about it as a fund that transforms the healthcare system. So let's get out of the semantics that are bogging this thing down and talk about a health care transformation fund. And what you do then is say, for the first 3 years where you're funded at 100%, you create a target for the market to move from fee-for-service payments to payments for value. And the market today is about 20% payment on value and 80% payment on fee-for-service. You move that so that there's a target for paying for value. Let's say we move it from 20% to 50% in the first 3 years. If you can't get that done, and I would bring in all of the stakeholders as governor and say, if you can't get that done in 3 years, we stop taking the funding because we're not going on the hook unless you guys all step up and put some skin in the game. After 3 years, if you're at 50%, we continue over the balance of that funding period from the feds, driving the amount of services that are handled in a value-based payment arrangement, not a fee-for-service arrangement. That will create, at the end of 10 years, a dramatically different financed healthcare system in the state. In a decade, you change healthcare in Florida for the future.
And when you have this conversation with legislators, what is their pushback when you're in the room sitting down with them?
Well, the most serious conversation we had about this happened right before healthcare.gov went live. And when healthcare.gov went live and didn't work, the parties that were involved in the discussion sort of backed away from the table because they thought that the ACA was going to fail on its own accord. I think that dialogue needs to be reinvigorated. We've got new people in the equation now, and I will be hopeful that there'll at least be some interest in having this dialogue. If we look across the board, the last number of states who have expanded Medicaid have been red states. So this is not a red and blue issue. This is really an economic issue, and it's also about the well-being of the people of the state.
That's Florida Blue CEO Patrick Garrity.
Still to come in our conversation, finding healthcare policy options inside the political rhetoric on the issue.
It's easy to say Medicare for all, but we can't pay for that.
Welcome back to the Sunshine Economy here on WLRN. Thanks again for listening and supporting public radio. I'm Tom Hudson.
I'm Sammy Mack.
Healthcare, the cost of care and the cost of insurance, was a big issue in the 2018 election. Florida has one of the highest percentages of the population that lives without health insurance. In 2017, about 1 in 8 Floridians did not have any health insurance, according to the Kaiser Family Foundation. In fact, more people in Florida don't have insurance than those who buy an individual health insurance plan, such as Obamacare.
The phrase Medicare for All and single-payer system were phrases voters heard during the campaign. As the head of Florida's largest private health insurer, Patrick Arity dismisses the ideas as solutions to the challenges patients face in affording and finding health care. He's the CEO of Florida Blue.
Medicare for All, to me, is a slogan, not a program. And I think it's actually very much short-sighted. If we break it down to its components, the idea that we would take Medicare and provide that to all Americans says we would eliminate choice from the marketplace. Everybody has to agree on the same set of benefits. I think that's a non-starter at the word go. That's sort of number one. Number two is the idea that any place who has looked at this, the state of Vermont as an example, Bernie Sanders might want to address this. In Vermont, they passed a law that said they would be single payer. They spent 5 years trying to implement it, and they failed. They failed because what it does to the taxes in the state of Vermont. California had the same challenge. It's easy to say Medicare for All, but we can't pay for that. We've got an employer system that largely works. We don't need to change that. Our focus ought to be on the pieces of the marketplace that need to be changed. And there are ways to address that without taking choice away from people in our country.
When you describe Medicare for All as a slogan, it sounds like your description of single payer is a broken, failed, or soon to fail answer to healthcare problems and healthcare cost challenges in the United States.
Yes, I think single payer is a failed way to think about this. I think we need to continue to release the private sector, choice, competition. One of the challenges we have in the healthcare system is that when we talk about competition, we thought that that was good for health plans, but we didn't think that that was good for providers. And in fact, the highest cost healthcare in the United States is where you have a single hospital owning a geography and buying up the doctors around them, they drive the cost to the highest point. So that doesn't seem to work very well either. And so I think what we need is a combination of competition across the entire marketplace, consumers to have choice and be able to make decisions. But we need that to be in a public-private partnership where someone like Governor DeSantis could look at a high-risk pool in the state of Florida that would help balance the market out so that you don't have the exposure to very high risk because you're sharing that risk across the state, but you are emphasizing competition and choice so that people get the benefit of both worlds.
How do you establish that relationship? How do you go about doing that in a market where nobody's really supposed to know what anything costs except for the insurance companies and the people getting paid? And then after the fact, frequently is how it works out with the person who's then used the service. How do you stop somebody from owning that market, either from the provider side or for the insurance side?
Well, from the insurance side, I can tell you that we have an application called Know Before You Go that we've used for years, where our members can look up and see in advance what their choices are and what the competitive marketplace is like for a service. So that's something that we've already are down the trail on, and I think more transparency will come. I came to Florida from Minnesota, a marketplace which has a high-risk pool and also has roughly 93% of its residents covered and not having gone to a single payer to get that done. So it's doable. Massachusetts has a marketplace with 97% of its people covered, and they're not a single payer state either. So there are ways to get everybody covered. I think the bigger challenge for all of us is how to get the cost under control. And I think greater competition, not lesser competition, is the answer for that.
Both for services and insurance?
For everybody.
Florida Blue CEO Patrick Garrity. Speaking of competition and price transparency, he says Florida Blue is moving to follow a state law requiring it to share what it pays for health procedures with a state website. That's still to come.
We don't take the sharing of data lightly, and being the largest player, we're the ones who would be held accountable.
Welcome back to The Sunshine Economy. I'm Tom Hudson.
And I'm Sammy Mack. In 2016, a new law in Florida took effect requiring most health insurance companies to share cost information with the state. The stated purpose of the law was to, quote, promote healthcare price and quality transparency. Okay, so specifically, the law means any company that provides health insurance to state workers or sells Medicaid managed care insurance to share their all claims data with a website. All claims data is the information you see on a statement you get from your health insurer after you visit a doctor. It includes the numerical codes that identify what was done, what the doctor or hospital billed, and what your insurance company actually paid. The law affects about a dozen different health insurance companies in Florida.
Now, the website the state uses, pricing.floridahealthfinder.gov, is built and managed by a separate company, Healthcare Cost Institute. It's a $6 million contract that it has with the state. Four health insurance companies help fund the institute. Three of those do business in Florida, Aetna, Humana, and United Healthcare. Those three have contributed their claims data to the state-required site, but others hadn't as of October, including the state's largest health insurer, Florida Blue.
But when we spoke with CEO Patrick Garrity in early December, he said the company will be sharing its cost information.
There was a lot of confusion around the original request, and I think we wanted some terms and usage understood so that we had a clear understanding of how the data would be utilized and what the exact terms would be there. So I think we have reached agreement about contribution of our information, and so that should be something that I think will be handled going forward. But, you know, as we are talking about data, we're always coming forward with our concerns about privacy, our concerns about security, our concerns about how the data will be used. We don't take the sharing of data lightly. And being the largest player, we're the ones who would be held accountable if any of those things were compromised in this process. It's a detailed arrangement.
Help us understand a little bit of where the confusion was or the concern was for Florida Blue in terms of this data. This was, a state-required, state-mandated healthcare price transparency website. The state went out and signed a contract with an organization to collect this information and put together a database that was searchable of dozens and dozens and dozens of common medical procedures that is supposed to be backed by real claims data from real patients provided by real insurance companies. So where was the concern, where was the confusion, and how did that get rectified in Florida Blue's case?
You know, anytime we're being asked to provide our data to a third party, we need to understand a lot of information about how it's being used and how it's going to be transmitted. And so we wanted to make sure that there were all the appropriate checks and balances and that we were comfortable with the use of that data. And really, that's the process that had to play out. It was we had obviously more demands than maybe some of the other players did, but we take that as being thorough and being very much careful about how we transmit the use of data and the protection of any of our members.
Have your concerns been addressed? Will Florida Blue begin providing this information, and if so, when?
Yes, we got worked through the process. We've now achieved comfort in how that has worked its way through, and we'll be providing the data. As far as I'm concerned, the decision to go has been made, and now it's a matter of logistics between our people and the people that are involved in gathering the data. So that's moving forward now.
And you mentioned that you wanted to see more checks and balances. I mean, what does a check and balance look like for what something costs?
Now, checks and balances are about the security of the information. It's about what's going to be shown and not shown. We have all kinds of arrangements with doctors. We have all kinds of contracts with employers. There are lots of things that we need to do to assure the privacy of the people that are involved in our arrangements. So it's really that process that we were protecting.
And so I understand patient information is protected, and that's something that you have a legal commitment to. But what else is at stake with how this data gets used? I mean, what happens if you find out what a particular doctor makes off of your plan, or a particular hospital system makes off of a hip replacement with you guys?
So many of these kinds of conversations lead to what's the underlying contract arrangement, and whether or not it's proprietary information or not, and how is that being protected. And so when we have contractual arrangements with people, if something is going to move in a different direction, we need to have a dialogue with the provider of care so they understand how data that they have been involved in is being used in the general public.
Did you have any doctors or hospital systems saying, hold off and don't do this, or, you know, try and fight it?
Again, I appreciate the question, but I'm not going to get into specifics around particular providers.
Pat, let me ask the question this way. What assurances have you received from the state that have allowed Florida Blue and your assessment of how its data is going to be used with this state-mandated price transparency website to push that data forward?
Tom, I would just tell you that the state and Florida Blue has reached an agreement. That agreement's between us and the state, and we're at a comfort level now about sharing the data, and so the data is moving forward.
And moving forward, as you've come to this agreement, does it allow for the past claims data? In other words, not just moving forward, but will it be collecting from procedures that have already taken place? Or is it just an agreement that requires the data to be shared from a certain date into the future?
It'll be certainly on past data, and then I think the detail on future data, I'm not certain of as I sit here and talk to you about it today, Tom.
That was Florida Blue CEO Patrick Garrity. Now, you can follow us on Twitter, of course, at WLRN. Look for a podcast of this program, all of our programs, by searching Sunshine Economy on iTunes. Pilar Ribe is our technical director. Polly Landis is our booking producer.
We had production help from WJCT Public Broadcasting in Jacksonville. I'm Sammy Mack.
And I'm Tom Hudson. Thanks for listening.